The previous program was the WBAI Evening News, heard daily at 6 p.m. Stay tuned for Extinction Rebellion Radio coming up at 6:30 p.m.
You're listening to Extinction Rebellion Radio on WBAI.
Welcome to the Rebellion.
Welcome to Extinction Rebellion Radio on WBAI with Matthew Kearney and Elise Lane. Extinction Rebellion is an international movement that uses nonviolent direct action to press for action on the climate emergency. So Matthew is recovering from his trip to Glasgow. He was amongst those protesting at COP26, the 26th conference of the parties of the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, or UNFCCC. That's quite a mouthful. Anyway, governments from around the world had gathered in Glasgow to perform a ritual of do-nothingness, a global north ritual carried out by men and women willing to sacrifice us all on the altar of their fossil fuel gods. Understand this. Now more than ever, we need an extinction rebellion. Anyway, Matthew will be back next week. He says he has a treasure trove of stories, many of which we will share with you over the coming months. So, speaking of extinction, we need, quote, to close the 1.5 degrees Celsius gap to stay alive, end quote. Those exact words come straight out of the health argument for climate action. A COP26 special report released by the World Health Organization, or WHO, last month in anticipation of COP26. No mincing words, no sugarcoating, no let's not scare people nonsense, just the plain truth. To stay alive, we must close the 1.5 degrees Celsius gap. And why is this the case? Well, as WHO points out, quote, climate change is already impacting health in a myriad of ways, including by leading to death and illness from increasingly frequent extreme weather events, such as heat waves, storms, and floods, the disruption of food systems, increases in zoonosis and food, water, and vector-borne diseases, and mental health issues. Furthermore, climate change is undermining many of the social determinants for good health, such as livelihoods, equality, and access to healthcare and social support structures, end quote. In other words, going beyond 1.5 degrees Celsius will make health matters worse, the fact of which makes climate change, according to WHO, quote, the single biggest health threat facing humanity, end quote. Now, unfortunately, as WHO sounds the alarm on the health crisis our climate crisis presents, and as it, you know, presents a good argument for centering health and climate action, WHO then undercuts its own sense of urgency. Now, what do I mean by this? Well, WHO goes on to propose that governments should, quote, set net zero greenhouse gas emission targets that are in line with health goals that are as close to absolute zero as possible, are reached as soon as possible, build a near-term action to halve greenhouse gas emissions by 2030, and ensure integrity and accountability. For high-income nations, net zero carbon emissions should be reached by 2040 at the latest, end quote. That net zero recommendation will not help us stay alive. It will not stave off the single biggest health threat facing humanity. You know, we had Doreen Stabenski on our show a few months ago. Doreen is lead author of the Friends of the Earth International report entitled Chasing Carbon Unicorns, The Deception of Carbon Markets and Net Zero. She's also professor of global environmental politics at the College of the Atlantic in Bar Harbor, Maine. And she told us when she was on our show that what we need is not net zero, but real zero. Real zero is what we need to stay alive. Y'all need to hashtag that. Real zero is what we need to stay alive. Friends of the Earth International explains net zero this way, quote, net zero means that fossil fuel companies can continue to explore, drill, extract, and burn fossil fuels while someone somewhere else sucks carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere, magically balancing our emissions. But whose land? whose forests will be used to suck that carbon out. The area of a land required to sequester just 2 gigatons of carbon through ecosystem restoration is estimated at 678 hectares, about twice the land area of the country of India, end quote. Well, I think you all know the answer to the question, whose land and forests will be used to suck that carbon out? The ongoing project of colonialism continues. It will kill us if we let it. Anyway, WHO outlined 10 recommendations for governments to maximize the health benefits of tackling climate change and to avoid the worst health impacts of the climate crisis. Now, you can find this report on WHO's website. Grab it, read it, discuss it, critique it, and then do something about what you read. You know, I was hanging out at my daughter's house a month or so ago, and while we were talking, the doorbell rang. It was a Sunday, so I just assumed we were getting a visit from the Jehovah Witnesses or from that guy who shows up once a year to say that his car broke down and, you know, can you give me a little change for gas? I need to get to my mother who has diabetes. Same story. And his car always breaks down in the exact same spot. Anyway, I went to the door and lo and behold, I was greeted by a community organizer who wanted to talk about health, COVID, and our climate crisis. You know, years ago, I attended an event, a community event in San Francisco that was focused on climate change. And during the question and answer period, I mentioned getting visits from Jehovah Witnesses every Sunday in my Oakland neighborhood. Now, people looked at me kind of sideways while I talked about this, like they had a nut in their audience. And since I was one of the few Black people there, they decided to be pretty polite. Some of you all know how that goes. Anyway, I said, the Jehovah Witnesses come to my door and they're dressed up in their Sunday best and they're polite. And they talk to you about the stuff that matters to them. And they thank you for your time, even if you don't give it. And then they leave you some literature. Now, I said to the people at that climate change event that not once did someone come knocking on my door to talk about climate change or leave me any literature about it. And I suggested to those folks that we needed to take a page out of the Jehovah Witness handbook for door-to-door outreach to spread the word about climate change. Now, you know, I know the Jehovah Witnesses don't have a handbook for a door-to-door outreach, but you know what I mean. Anyway, I got a little bit of polite applause. Now, that was almost 20 years ago. So imagine my surprise when that community organizer came knocking on my door. Now, at the time, I couldn't speak to him, but I took his flyer, which read in part, quote, warning, global warming threatens your health. Coalition of Concerned Medical Professionals, or CCMP, asks you to join us taking action now, end quote. So as soon as I had the opportunity, I called the number listed on the flyer and said to the person who answered my call, please come on our show and talk about your work. Well, let me tell you this. We got 4 folks from CCMP who said yes. So I am pleased to introduce you to Adrian Urrutia, CCMP Administrative Assistant, Emily Sosa, CCMP Advocacy Coordinator, Peter Amadeo, CCMP Volunteers Coordinator, and Luz Mejia Mas, CCMP Operations Manager. Welcome, everyone, to Extinction Rebellion Radio.
Thank you.
Thank you, Elias.
Before we get started, why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourselves. Adrian, why don't you start?
My name is Adrian Urrutia. I've been volunteering here at CCMP since June of last year, pretty much right before after the pandemic started. And again, just seeing how many people were also going through like the conditions that we were going through actually. And I have several jobs in the service industry, as well as even in the nonprofit complex as well. So it has given me an idea of we need to do more. And that is why I'm here.
Excellent.
My name is Emily. I'm a full-time student at Berkeley with a psychology pre-med major, and I'm the advocacy coordinator here. I've been here since about the end of August, and it's just coming to help people. You know, our government isn't really doing anything to help us, and people need us, and that's why I'm here.
Okay. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Peter. I'm the volunteer coordinator. I've been with CCMP coming up on 7 months now. I am a PhD in organic chemistry, and I work in chemical manufacturing as my day job. And I have had some really negative experiences with the medical industrial complex, and to see that my degree and my job and all that stuff, I still struggle. I knew that, you know, other people are going to be struggling a lot more than I am. And I just became very clear through my experiences with my chronic illnesses that, you know, we need a new healthcare system.
Yes, we do. Thank you.
And my name is Luce. I'm the operations manager. I actually used to work at the FQHCs, which are the federally qualified health centers. I also worked with county and schools. And so I have several years of like nonprofit work, but ultimately I saw that we needed so much more. So I've dedicated my life to changing these conditions, and I'm a full-time organizer.
Well, thank you all for being on this radio program. It's just a pleasure to have you here. Luce, I'm going to start with you. What is the Coalition of Concerned Medical Professionals, or CCMP, and how did it get started?
Yes, so CCMP was actually formed back in 1976 here in the Bay Area as a free and voluntary unincorporated private membership association. And we're composed of healthcare professionals, students, community activists, low-income domestic and service workers, delegates from the Bay Area Workers Benefit Council, also known as the WBC, and of course, others who are interested in fighting for comprehensive healthcare on behalf of low-income workers and uninsured for whom access to healthcare is inadequate. And it actually was the lack of access to comprehensive medical care that was among the top priorities identified by the Workers' Benefit Council delegates, who then decided that we needed to seek out interested healthcare professionals and other individuals from the community in order to begin a free of charge preventive medical benefit program that's all volunteer ran, operated independent of government and other strings attached funding. And as this effort grew, it eventually led to the founding of the Coalition of Concerned Medical Professionals and its commitment to comprehensive healthcare for low-income workers.
Now, Peter, at the beginning of the show, I talked a little bit about the World Health Organization's COP26 special report entitled The Health Argument for Climate Action. And in that report, it states that climate change is the single biggest health threat facing humanity. It also states, without mincing words, that we need to close the 1.5 degrees Celsius gap to stay alive. What are your thoughts on those claims?
Yeah, thank you. As many people who have been on the front lines dealing with the realities of climate change have been saying, we need much more than words. We need action. Just saying that we need to do something doesn't mean doing it. We must take climate action to stop the trajectory of global warming, as our lives and future livability of planet Earth depend on it. We're calling for the immediate implementation of the 2030 Sustainable Development Goals, or SDGs. Have you heard of them?
Tell me about them.
All right. So there are 17 goals adopted unanimously by all member states of the United Nations, including the United States, on September 25th, 2015, as the agenda for all countries to prioritize and achieve cooperatively by 2030 to ensure that all human beings can fulfill their potential in dignity and equality in a healthy environment. They include ending poverty, hunger, ensuring good health and well-being, and more. Because we can't really end climate change, our fight for comprehensive health care is exactly consistent with the 2030 SDGs. Despite the U.S. federal government having signed to adopt them in late 2015, the U.S. has not implemented the SDGs and has not created any empowered government bodies to be responsible for defining and implementing a national plan, in contrast with many countries that have done exactly that.
You're listening to Extinction Rebellion Radio on WBAI 99.5 FM, New York City, talking to folks in Oakland. And I am speaking to Adrian Urrutia, Emily Sosa, Peter Amadeo, and Luz Mejia Mas about climate change and health. And they work with the Coalition of Concerned Medical Professionals, or CCMP, located here in Oakland, California, which has, since 1976, dedicated itself to fight for comprehensive health care with and on behalf of low-income workers and the medically uninsured. Emily, how are your benefit recipients and members impacted by climate change?
Yeah, that's a great question. So air pollution largely impacts our benefit recipients as they typically reside in areas that are less expensive due to what their low wages can afford. These areas are known as flatlands, which are near the highways where pollution sits. This is part of the reason the life expectancy is 15 years higher in the hills of Oakland than in the flatlands.
Talk about the hills of Oakland. What New Yorkers are not going to know what that means, so you just need to describe that.
It's more a place where there's more money. People with more money live there. They can afford more than the people on the flatlands.
They have views. They have views of the bay.
Exactly. Views and trees. They got lots of trees.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Childhood asthma in East Oakland is more than twice as high as it is in the rest of Alameda County. And also the type of jobs our benefit recipients do are typically outdoors, such as day laborers who do construction or gardening. They're thus further exposed to the pollution, smoke from the ever-growing in frequency and size of wildfires and heat. And actually, OSHA hasn't set any federal heat standards for outdoor workers, which is a majority of our benefit recipients that we see here.
Now, talk about your door-to-door campaign. It seems like so many climate organizers and organizations that are social justice organizations resist going door-to-door to talk to everyday people. Explain why you do it.
Yes, of course. Well, like I mentioned, Elise, CCMP started because we build an organization directly to respond to the needs of the lowest paid workers. And that requires going into the hardest hit communities and finding the biggest problems that you know, need resolving. And we say also that every movement has to start on the ground and meticulously build organization where no one is left behind. So that means going into neighborhoods that have been left behind. And so going door to door is a tried and true method by many movements, you know, looking to enact change, from the farm labor movement to the civil rights movement.
Peter, how can people find out more about what you're doing, what CCMP is doing in order to participate?
Call into our office anytime at 510-436-8020. That's 510-436-8020. We've been open 7 days a week from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. since 1976. We have not closed our doors a single day. You can stop by our office at 2809 38th Avenue in Oakland and see for yourself what we are building and what you can be a part of.
All right. Well, Luce, Peter, Adrian, and Emily, thank you so much for coming on to our show. And I encourage people to reach out to CCMP and become involved. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Amy. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're listening to Extinction Rebellion Radio on WBAI 99.5 FM, New York City. And we were just speaking to organizers with the Coalition of Concerned Medical Professionals about the threat that global warming poses to our health.
We set out to not only change Buffalo, but to change the way progressive politics are viewed in upstate New York. And it's not lost on me that we have a very entrenched Democratic Party that has no interest in our type of politics. So from the very beginning, last year, when I brought my island of misfit toys together, we were well aware that we were going to have to do things non-traditionally,
yes.
Outside of the system, in the middle of a pandemic.
Yes.
This is organizing.
Yes.
Now, finally, for today's show, we return to Buffalo, New York, mayoral candidate India Walton. On October 26th, this program broadcast an interview with India Walton, the prize winner of Buffalo's Democratic primary this past June. That show has been archived on WBAI, and we recommend that our audience listen if they haven't already to that very interesting interview. As you probably know by now, if you've been following that race at all, the incumbent mayor of Buffalo, Byron Brown, handily defeated Walton in the general election on November 2nd, although Walton was the only one on the ballot. Brown accomplished this despite losing in the primary to Walton by 7 percentage points and his subsequent lack of success in attempting to get his name on the ballot with any other party line. Brown countered Walton's victory by organizing a write-in campaign that many in the media, even progressive media, dismissed as quixotic, as it should have been. But even though Brown was the big loser twice, he still had in his corner the real estate developers, the construction companies, and the banks and other institutions that support those powerful entities. Most significantly, he had on his side the far-right Republican politician and failed gubernatorial candidate Carl Paladino, that former co-chair of Trump's 2016 campaign in New York State. Paladino has been known to put his foot in his racist, reactionary mouth, on one occasion comparing Michelle Obama to a gorilla, a comment even Trump's national campaign condemned. So it seems that the Democratic establishment is totally anti-Trump until it needs the help of Trump politicians to win elections against progressives. So Brown, enjoying the support of both the corporate elite and Paladino, launched a TV ad campaign in which he claimed that Walton, if she became mayor, planned to fire 100 officers from the Buffalo police force, a claim Walton vociferously denied. Brown responded to criticism of the controversial ad by claiming that Walton could not, as she had promised to do, cut $7.5 million from the city's police department budget without firing 100 officers. However, a quick check of Buffalo's most recent annual budget shows that the city had allocated about $140 million for law enforcement. $7.5 million of that would thus represent only a bit more than 5% of the total. So is it really, you know, that likely that Walton might have been able to cut a mere 5% from the police budget without having to fire officers? But putting aside the substance of the issue, there was the disturbingly dubious ethics of the ad itself. The commercial showed not Mayor Brown, but people identifying themselves as police and wearing shirts with the word police on them, all advocating for Brown by claiming that Walton would fire them personally if she were elected. You know, it's perfectly legal for public employees to campaign for candidates for public office and even to appear on camera, as long as they don't do so in their public role, right? However, it's a violation of federal law for public employees to campaign for candidates in their capacity as public employees. The officers in question identified themselves in the ad as police and also wore clothing labeled police, which would certainly imply that the law had been violated. Buffalo Police Commissioner Byron Lockwood, a Brown appointee, admitted giving prior approval to the appearance of the police in the ad, claiming it was okay if they did not wear uniforms or carry police equipment. What they actually wore, however, may or may not have been Class B uniforms, as Buffalo attorney and Walton supporter Stephanie A. Adams has suggested. But Adams really doesn't care what the police in the ad wore, she says, as simply endorsing Brown as police officers was, according to her, an ethics violation. Brown went so far as to propose giving out push stamps with his name printed on them so that supporters could literally stamp Brown's name on the ballot rather than having to write it out. Now, Brown seems not to have actually carried out this outrageous plan, but, you know, came to his mind, right? As we stated in the show containing the Walton interview, Extinction Rebellion is not in the business of campaigning or for or even endorsing political candidates for any office. On the other hand, since it's wildly unlikely that any politician other than a progressive would propose the climate policies Extinction Rebellion would logically support, when a progressive like Walton proves she can win elections, we're interested in what she has to say. But we're also interested in the lengths to which the mainstream political establishment will go to stop such candidates, which, judging by this election, are literally without limits. And if they're stopping such candidates, they're also stopping those candidates' progressive climate politics. Thank you for listening once again to Extinction Rebellion Radio. Matthew will be back next week. Take great care of yourselves.
This has been Extinction Rebellion Radio.
I'm J.W. Walker, one of the founding members of Gays Against Guns. In light of the verdict in the Kyle Rittenhouse trial in Kenosha, Wisconsin, Gays Against Guns has put out the following statement. Although, given the composition of the jury and the judge's bizarre and clearly biased behavior throughout the trial, this verdict was unsurprising. We are still disgusted that this hooligan was just let off after murdering two people and maiming a third. Everything about this case demonstrates how broad and deep the connections between gun culture, white supremacy, and our criminal justice system are. The decision has guaranteed that more of these violent sociopathic incels will decide to go shoot protesters demonstrating against white supremacy. The quote-unquote coming race war that white supremacist agitators have been foretelling for decades and doing everything within their power to bring to fruition for just as long seems nearer to becoming an actual possibility. And that is a frightening prospect. Protests against these sorts of injustices will become less safe. But we shall not stop publicly demonstrating against gun culture and white supremacy, because we must, because this jury's decision makes it all the more imperative that we do. Please tune in to Radio Gag every Tuesday at 2:30 p.m. for more discussions on issues like the Kyle Rittenhouse verdict and other issues related to gun violence prevention in the United States.
November 8, 2021 is the notice date to propose Pacifica bylaws amendments. The proposed amendments may be found on the Foundation's website at www.pacifica.org for review. Votes by the Pacifica National Board and the various local station boards regarding said amendments will occur thereafter.
Join us on November 26th to December 12th at Cinema Village, Sinopolis, and virtually as we celebrate 29 years of the ADIFF, the film festival that always brings you great films about people of color all over the world. Discover over 70 entertaining and revealing fiction and documentary films, including 38 world, U.S., and New York premieres. The African Diaspora International Film Festival from November 26th to December 12th. For tickets and schedule, go to nyadiff.org or call 212-864-1760. That's 212-864-1760. Enjoy your world on the big screen.
Do you want your favorite WBAI programming to continue to air without the Fun Drive Day preemption? Becoming a BAI buddy is a great way to prevent that and to help support the station. Just by going to give to WBAI.org, you can donate today. So before you decide to buy that electronic accessory for your smartphone, here are some more fulfilling ways to use that money with some perks. You can use your WBAI membership card and receive discounts on Zipcar, 2 for the price of 1 admission at the Museum of the City of New York, 20% off sessions with life and career coach Nina Delavecchia, and much more. You will also receive a WBAI tote bag, which you can use to carry around some on-air giveaways. For more information, go to give2, that's the number 2, WBAI.org.
The previous program was Extinction Rebellion Radio, heard Tuesdays at 6:30 p.m. right after the W.